Camilla for us today. I really appreciate it. And thanks to Brent for doing our leading so far earlier in the service too. Choir, that was a really wonderful anthem this morning. I loved how it built and it was really stirring there. I've always liked the thing too where the piano will kind of play some pretty, you know, kind of intense chords and then stop, and then the choir comes in and then back and forth echoing that way. That's always one of my favorite things in an anthem. So really wonderful today. I also had a great time with everyone, and thanks to folks who participated in that in some way in particular. Mike, Glenna, thanks for hooking us up with Shannon. Our service last week where we got to celebrate Earth Day and also connect with our community churches all around the country was really special. I hope you had a good time like I did. And kind of on that theme of holidays and things like that, this week we have kind of some special things, at least for our culture, on the calendar. Maybe some of you noticed them and celebrate, maybe not. On Thursday, we had a newer one, but that's getting bigger and bigger, I think, with the Disney behemoth that goes the way that it does. We had Star Wars Day because of the pun of May the 4th be with you, right? And so now, you know, like a lot of stores have sales on Star Wars merchandise. There's special screenings of the films. People do parties where they dress up as characters, all sorts of things like that. So it's becoming, like I said, more and more of a thing that people enjoy if they're a Star Wars fan, getting to celebrate something special with other people that like Star Wars too. And then also on Friday, we had Cinco de Mayo. That's a little bit more of a common popular one. At least maybe you go to a Mexican restaurant, get some tacos, maybe get a margarita or something. And that is also an interesting holiday because a lot of us in the States, I think of Cinco de Mayo, it must be like Mexican Independence Day or something like that. But it's actually not. They actually celebrate their Independence Day in September. Cinco de Mayo is a little bit of a created holiday as well. It celebrates a victory in the Battle of Puebla in 1862 when France was trying to come over to Mexico and take over and install an emperor to kind of get some more land back on this continent. But the thing was, they ended up losing again after that. And France did end up taking over Mexico City and installing the emperor over the next year. So the victory at that battle that Cinco de Mayo celebrates did not last very long. But it was used at the time, to some degree, the fact that they could beat the French Empire then and gave them inspiration so that they could maybe fight back over time and eventually get the French emperor kicked out again, stand up to European powers. But it hasn't really kept as a really significant holiday in Mexico. It actually has ended up being more of a holiday for Mexicans in other parts of the world, including and especially the United States. But there are also Cinco de Mayo parties in places like London and Australia, even Nigeria. So it's become more of a holiday of celebrating Mexican culture for people that are spread out all over. Interestingly, it actually did start as more of a holiday in the U.S. even at the beginning, because this was in the middle of the Civil War, and a lot of people in the United States were worried that if France got into Mexico quickly and didn't have a lot of battles that they'd have to deal with, that they might try to sneak up and take advantage of the North and South fighting each other and try to get some more land out of the United States as well. So people in the United States actually celebrated it more, even going back that far. And so both of these, I think, are an interesting example of the fact that we like to come up with holidays even though they're a little bit different or the meaning is not automatic and obvious that it's going to be this big deal, right? This is a little bit different than like in the United States, 4th of July, right? That's when we declared independence. That seems like a natural thing to make a big deal out of. If we made a big deal out of a random battle that then we ended up not, you know, like what if we celebrated the battle right before the British came in and burned down the White House in 1812, right? We think that was a little bit weird as a thing, as a country to celebrate, but we like to find ways however we can to celebrate. And then often these things even take on their own meaning as we celebrate them over time. Aislinn's swimming team celebrated Cinco de Mayo on Friday for part of her synchronized swimming. And so, right, this idea that they just keep on taking more and more meaning. Now, here's the thing. We can feel very jaded about how this goes. Especially, right, when we think of holidays that seem like people just did them to sell us greeting cards or make us buy gifts for each other that we don't really need, right? The commercialism, it makes sense. If something's being exploited or the meaning's being lost, why we would get a little bit cynical about this. But The idea overall of making holidays to inject joy or remembrance into our rhythms of life and therefore make meaning in our lives, I think, is something that we can take a lot of lessons from. Making meaning is a really important way of remembering our values, not just time that passes, but the things that are really important to us. We lift them up. We give a boost for living the way that we feel will bring about the most goodness, the most joy, the most camaraderie in the world. And so when we come up with acts of infusing meaning, remembrance, and joy into our patterns of life, I think that we can describe this as, in fact, a deeply faithful and spiritual thing to do. We get the word holiday, after all, by smashing together the words holy and day. Because for most cultures, holidays do, in fact, tend to start with observances that are related to faith and religion. We see how foundational this same idea and coming up with things that we celebrate, how foundational that is in our faith, in part from the verses that we read today in Deuteronomy and the Ten Commandments that are there. Now, we may not be used to reading, we won't do that slide quite yet, Corey, but that's okay. We may not be used to reading the Ten Commandments from the book of Deuteronomy, because that's three books after, in the story of the Israelites escaping from Egypt and then roaming the desert, where we are used to reading the Ten Commandments in the book of Exodus. But I chose this particular passage, how it's recaptured in Deuteronomy, because it has an introduction that the commandments in Exodus don't have. It talks about how Israel, we want to look at these again. Remember how we were wandering in the desert by Horeb, and it wasn't just something that happened to people like long ago. Like, God came to us, and we have to hold on to that and make that meaningful and special. Exodus really is trying to depict more the first presentation of the law that the Israelites get when Moses comes down from Mount Sinai. But in Deuteronomy, we see a little bit more of this idea that it's portraying how the community kept making meaning by reading the law to themselves repeatedly and seeing how it connected them with God and with each other. We see Moses here gathering people together to refresh and to remember. There are unique experiences that they've gone through, and God has given them a special relationship with God and with each other through the law, and he wants to make sure that that stays highlighted and at the front of their minds. And so they have this special time together where they restate the law. They reroot themselves in the special meaning. It's a kind of holy day because they want it to stay with them even more on all of their days. And it's worth highlighting, too, that this commandment about Sabbath, because even though, you know, he read this as one particular day, and even though this is maybe different than a lot of holidays that we think of, Sabbath is its own sort of holy day. It's supposed to be kept holy, even though we have it happen once a week. This is a clear example of what it can be like to make that faithful spiritual meaning of regular rhythms of our life. Holy ultimately means, in Hebrew, set apart for special meaning. Now, it doesn't actually have to automatically have spiritual emphasis, but it shows that paying special attention to special meaning and impact of things on our lives, even when we especially take care to craft meaning, how that helps us make even our daily rhythms, our daily behaviors, our daily tasks, they can be something that themselves are infused with a special kind of meaning. They can become holy if we give them that intention. And that is a spiritual act. It's something that God cares a lot about because God participates in this. He leads us in it. He gives us these days. He calls us to continue to be those sorts of people that find the holiness in the regular things that we do, that infuse meaning into it. And the commandment here in particular shows that making something holy often involves a few particular things. It's not just sort of like paying special attention in a very general way. Making something holy, we can learn from this, and we can repeat this same pattern for new ways now. Making something holy is an inclusive and an inviting act. It's not something that is meant to divide us or isolate us from each other. Now, this might seem counterintuitive if holy means setting something apart, but we see clearly that God is trying to set time apart to allow every type of person to come together. And even not only every type of person, like the aliens and foreigners amongst the Israelites, or their servants, not just the important people, but even their animals. God's like, everybody gets to participate in this holiness. That's what's going to make it this time especially set apart. And that's different than some people who are special getting to have something set apart for themselves, but that relies on using the time of other people to make it special for them. So if there was a holiday where five of you get to get pampered and everything's great, but everyone else has to do all the work to make those five people feel pampered, that's not really a holiday that we're talking about here. This is where everybody is getting to have the holiness and the meaning. And that's a really powerful example for God to set in terms of what that means for when we do this together. And even more so, we see that God sets this example of making something holy by taking things that may seem regular or unimportant and actually somehow making them the most important part of life if we can pay attention. And we can do this to bring about the best parts of life, even where struggle and oppression might be present. We see God in this passage in Deuteronomy saying that Sabbath should be given as a way of remembering, but also counteracting the slavery that the Israelites had experienced and was still all around them. Sabbath was a way that they would no longer be slaves to somebody new, that they would have that sense of your dignity is intact, your opportunity to have rest and not just be pressured and whipped on and everything is lifted up and given opportunity. Sabbath starts by affirming that dignity had been robbed by them, and then it gives rest and freedom where there had been exploitation. It pays special attention that not only celebrates what God has done, but it helps that assure that God's people will never go back to those same mistakes that other people had done to them. Now, we can notice, by the way, that when this same Sabbath gift is given in Exodus, God gives another deep reason for why the day can be kept as holy. In that passage, God lifts up the fact that God created all of reality in 6 days, and then God rested on the seventh day. And so in that case, giving Sabbath as a holy day, is God sharing the rhythms, God sharing the meaning, God sharing the joy of the divine with everyone. And again, that's something beautiful to take encouragement in. And it's a reminder that we're not supposed to set up ourselves as gods that get rest while other people don't, because we shouldn't expect that from other people when God does not ask that of other people, that God shares the same rest that God took with us, so we should want to share that with each other. And so these are not just commandments that are arbitrary, like just do this because God says so. God's rooting them in meaning and experience and giving values and patterns that we should pass along and we should hold on to. Because we celebrate Sabbath, that helps us remember on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday to still be people that affirm folks' dignity, that still give people a sense of grace and rest and opportunity, even in the things where we ask each other to do things for each other. Now, I bring all of this stuff up because the ways that our culture has come up with this week to make special meaning made me feel like it was worth having some time together today to reflect on why we do this and bring meaning into our lives. I'm not trying to say that I think May the 4th be with you, Star Wars Day, or Cinco de Mayo are horrible or superfluous or should be rejected because they're examples of people kind of constructing meaning out of things that we don't automatically associate with being really important or holy in the traditional way, right? I think finding reasons to put joy into our lives and meaning into our lives is good, even if it is silly, even if it is a little bit contrived and made up. If you enjoyed those holidays in some way, or if you think now you might, I don't know, go home and watch a Star Wars movie this afternoon, or have Taco Tuesday coming up to catch up or anything like that, great. Have that joy. I bring all this up today because I realize that for us, a lot of holy days that we connect with in our faith are pretty locked in. We know what they are. We're used to the rhythms. They've been around for a while. We have traditions around them, which is good. But sometimes maybe those traditions are things we end up going through the motions about. We may overlook a little bit some of the deeper meaning. Like, how many of us really knew what Cinco de Mayo really meant, right? Like, that's a history lesson we don't really normally get. We go to the Mexican restaurant, we have fun, and that's good. And Sabbath sometimes, too. Do we really think on Sunday that we are participating in something that is anti-slavery? We're participating in something that is promoting the dignity and rest of anybody that is going through, like, a hard time? That we're saying that this is the type of culture that we want people to be able to have rest? We want to have dignity in their work. We want to have rhythms that allow them to celebrate their humanity. I don't know if we always think about that when we come to church. That's a part of what we're doing every single week. So it occurs to me that it can be worth us opening ourselves up to the possibility even more and more of meaning making in our faith. I think that could be good for us, for our connection with God, for our connection with each other, to think of God as a God who makes holy days. And then when we are those types of people, we can experience more of God's salvation coming into our regular lives more and more. There's a book that has meant a lot to me in my personal devotions. We can put that slide up now, Corey, for helping me find faithful meaning in the regular rhythms of daily life. It's called Common Prayer. It was put together by some authors named Jonathan Wilson Hartgrove, Anuma Okoro, and Shane Claiborne. And by the way, Mike, I'll mention Shane Claiborne is going to be a featured speaker at the ICCC conference this summer, so that should be really fun. He's great. It's a book with prayers and thoughts for every day of the year, as well as some special occasions and circumstances that we may want to have prayers for, too. In the book's introduction, the authors explain why they wrote the book and compiled it in the way that they did to be able to check in on regularly. They explain all the potential for how we can find meaning and joy by marking things as holy in our regular lives. They say, first, the church's calendar at its best weaves in and out of the world around us. It's not really that we need a Christian calendar because we're to separate ourselves from the secular world. The point's not to be sectarian or to try to put ourselves at odds with non-Christians. The point is to keep God's story at the center of our lives and therefore at the center of our calendar. It is through the lens of Jesus that we're able to read history. We understand meaning and we interpret what is good or bad about a particular time or event. When we in the church take our citizenship in heaven seriously, we will reshape our minds by marking our calendars differently. We will remember the holy days of the biblical narrative and God's movement in history rather than just the festivals of pharaohs and Caesars. Just as Jesus entered the world as a poor backwater baby and a completely different kind of King of Kings, we find the true meaning and joy of lifting up, remembering and celebrating the humble, celebrating the displaced, even the tortured, and marking the simple, nonviolent revolutionary acts against all the attempts around us by empires to capture our imagination and our allegiance. Being people that look at a different type of holiness in the world around us all the time helps us be the type of people who stand up to what needs to be stood up against, who give encouragement where encouragement needs to be given, who give dignity and love where that is missing. Now, we're going to be taking communion today in a few minutes, and this is a great example of how we share in the effort to keep making special meaning from things that can be every day. We just share bread and juice. They're pretty simple. But we're also putting our focus on something profoundly different than what usually gets celebrated and given meaning in our culture, right? We're celebrating brokenness. We're celebrating sacrifice. We're not celebrating accumulation. We're not celebrating conquering and power like that. So hopefully, doing that regularly like we do helps shape how we live in the everyday with love and service and sacrifice, even for those that we may want to call unworthy, because we remember how Jesus did that for us. We anchor ourselves in that. But you may have noticed that I chose a passage also from the Last Supper, but about something different that Jesus did. And it's because I wanted us to notice again how holy days and traditions do come from choices. Because that maybe helps us keep being people that make little choices for making meaning in our lives, finding new traditions and things that we can do together, even until today. There is a very good reason why we take communion seriously and centrally as a practice in our faith. It connects us to the cross and it connects us to the empty tomb. And it connects us to the presence of Jesus in our lives. So the thing is, though, if you read the Gospels, the stories of Jesus most directly, you might be surprised that this passage about foot washing gets more verses then all of the verses put together about the actual giving of the bread and the juice in all three of the other Gospels. And John doesn't mention this at all. John mentions the foot washing. Only Matthew also mentions anything about doing that meal in remembrance of Jesus. The other Gospels don't mention that. Jesus spends the full last three verses of our passage today encouraging his followers to do foot washing like he did, to remember it by participating. The roots of the tradition regularly observing communion is actually in Paul's first letter to the Corinthians. He's the one that recounts the story in a way that puts focus on repeating the process and remembering Jesus in that way. But even that passage is still shorter than these verses about foot washing in John. And we know, by the way, that also from Paul's other letters, that foot washing was still a thing that the early church was doing regularly together. Now, I am not proposing that we get rid of communion and do foot washing all the time. I think it does make sense why that fell out of practice, right? But I think it's true that maybe that ick that we feel a little bit about it should give us some pause, because in some ways that makes what Jesus did even more powerful. That makes that encouragement of Jesus to say, we can be a community that deals with the ick. Like, that's its own powerful thing that Jesus is telling us to. So I want us to have a moment today of reflecting on how we notice meaning, how we choose to make things important or not, and then how things become special parts of our regular life or not. Because I think God can give us a gift if we find room for holy making in our lives, even in very small ways. So actually, after we do the communion liturgy today, while people are coming to the rails, I'm going to be available with water down by one of the pews. If you would like, I can, if somebody wants to go full bore and have your feet washed, we'll figure out how to do that. But I know that that might be springing something on you. But if you want to be blessed with water, maybe on your shoes or on your hands or head, like Peter said, that will be available. You don't have to participate, but it feels weird to have mentioned this and not have it available. So we're going to have it available. And if it's just me by my lonesome with my little bowl of water, that's okay. But if you feel like this could be meaningful, to just have a type of blessing, it'll be there. But most of all, what I want us to do today is invite and encourage us, whether it's individually or in our various relationships in our life, like our families, maybe even our work, our friends, and especially our church family here together, to see, God, how might you inspire us to make more of our life holy? I'm serious about this. If you have ideas, if you notice things in the traditions and history of our church, and something that happens for the first time, and we want to make sure it doesn't just pass by because we're like, we can't make Christmas out of this, so what should we do? Let's come up with ideas. Let's have conversations. Let's be people who make the things that matter holy, even if they're small. As one example in my common prayer book, we can go to the last slide, Corey. They note that on May 15th, there are some Catholics that celebrate a man named St. Isidore the Farmer. He lived all the way back in the 1100s. He's a very fascinating saint because he didn't start a movement. He didn't have a big position or do miracles. In fact, he spent his entire life working the land for someone else who owned it as a rich landowner. He was their serf. But he did this starting every day with worship. He did this praying as he worked. He did this becoming known by everyone around him as someone who was generous and helpful to anyone who asked or anyone who didn't, but that he was able to notice. And we know that people like this are always loved by those their lives come in touch with, but very rarely are they widely noticed. I think if we stop for a second, all of us, and maybe even looking around the room, we know some St. Isidores. But can we make meaning for them? Even the Catholic Church doesn't have a lot of saints like this. But he's a fascinating person to think about and maybe recognize in some of the faces and lives around us. I think it would be amazing if we could together lift up how holiness is like that in our midst right now. To find special things to remember, special things to create particular times of joy around, and to fill our regular rhythms of life with more and more meaning. Because we're able as a community to take on God's eyes and to take on God's heart for what matters. And then we immerse ourselves in it even in these ways of finding something special where other people might not look. Again, I don't know what that's going to look like, but I encourage us to figure it out how to be those types of people together. I hope we can do that together. And we'll start by participating in a gift that's been given us already, communion.